This is VOA News. I'm Alexis Strobe. Fighting in the Gaza Strip escalated on Thursday with some of the most intense Israeli bombardment of the war, and Hamas demonstrated its ability to rocket Tel Aviv, even as the enemies held their most serious talks for weeks on a new truce. In the United Nations, another scheduled meeting of the Security Council is set for Friday, while both sides haggle over the wording.
Everything that can be done must be done to get aid into Gaza to help people in the desperate situation that they're in. And on that level, we've been talking about the United Nations Security Council resolution, where we are very keen to see consensus arrived at.
British Foreign Minister David Cameron. Hamas is a U.S.-designated terrorist group. Israeli police say 19 Israeli prison guards are under investigation in the death of a 38-year-old Palestinian security prisoner. AP correspondent Charles De Ledesma reports.
The Palestinian Prisoners Club, an advocacy group, says the prisoner was found with severe signs of violence on his body and died on November the 18th at a prison in the southern Negev desert. He was 18 years into a 25-year sentence for attempted murder. Police announced the investigation of the guard on Thursday after a gag order expired. The Israel Prison Service says it's cooperating. The Prisoners Club says about 7,800 Palestinians are currently held by Israel, including hundreds rounded up since the start of the Israel-Hamas war. I'm Charles De Ledesma.
Russia is working to strengthen ties to North Africa and spread its narrative about Ukraine and Gaza as the United States' popularity throughout the Arab world diminishes. As the two wars grind on, Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov visited Morocco and Tunisia this week in an effort to deepen ties between Moscow and Arab countries. For additional stories 24 hours a day, visit our website, voanews.com. This is VOA News. During the frantic search for the gunman earlier this month at the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, arriving police unknowingly directed the shooter out of the building. The AP's Ed Donahue reports.
He's selective. Be careful. He's selective.
According to body camera video and police accounts, officers mistook the gunman for a bystander and yelled at him to
get out.
The gunman, later identified as Anthony Polito, appears only for a few moments in more than 5 hours of footage made public. There was no indication he had a gun. Polito walked out of the building, pulled his weapon, and a minute later was killed in a shootout. Clark County Undersheriff Andrew Walsh told the AP the officers didn't have a description of the shooter at the time. Three professors were killed. Police haven't mentioned a motive, but Polito was turned down for a teaching job at UNLV. I'm Ed Donahue.
A federal judge hearing a challenge to a transgender health care ban for minors and restrictions for adults noted that Republican Florida Governor Ron DeSantis spread false information about doctors mutilating children's genitals. Judge Robert Hinkle said during the last day of the trial that DeSantis repeated his comments, even though there's been no such documented cases of doctors castrating or mutilating children's genitals. Hinkle said he will rule sometime after the holiday on whether DeSantis, the legislature, and the Department of Health deliberately targeted transgender people with the new law, or whether the law simply imposed reasonable restrictions to protect the public. Former New York mayor and Trump advisor Rudy Giuliani has filed for bankruptcy. AP correspondent Norman Hall reports.
Once heralded as America's mayor, Rudy Giuliani has acknowledged severe financial strains in a filing in bankruptcy court. Giuliani listed nearly $153 million in existing or potential debts, but assets in the range of $1 million to $10 million. A spokesperson says the filing will give Giuliani time to appeal a court order to pay $148 million in a defamation case filed by two Georgia election workers.
The absurdity of the number merely underscores the absurdity of the entire proceeding.
But the bankruptcy filing may not forestall the penalty. A federal judge in Washington says the two workers can start working immediately to collect the judgment. Norman Hall, Washington.
Negotiations over how to control migration at the U.S. border with Mexico aren't just heating up on Capitol Hill. They're also taking place between U.S. and Mexican officials as an influx of migrants strains enforcement efforts. Top U.S. officials are expected to visit Mexico soon to continue the conversation. Two rail crossings between the countries were closed earlier this week when U.S. officials said personnel needed to be redeployed to handle migrants who were illegally crossing the border. Mexican companies said the decision is hampering trade and called for the crossings to be reopened. For additional stories, 24 hours a day, visit voanews.com. I'm Alexis Strobe, VOA News.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Friday, December 22nd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Vote counting continues in the Democratic Republic of Congo following a second day of voting.
It's going to be very difficult to know how it's going because vote counting is taking place at every polling station, and there are about 70,000 plus voting stations.
Malawi bans maize imports from Kenya and Tanzania over disease concerns. UNICEF issues a grave warning regarding the intensifying conflict in Sudan's Al Jazeera state. The World Bank says remittances to low- and middle-income countries reached an estimated $669 billion in 2023. A former Chief Justice of Liberia is found guilty of murder.
We are going to meet tomorrow and consider the better option, whether we are intending to request the judge to set the verdict aside because it does not support the evidence, or we intend to appeal.
And Christmas and New Year messages from our listeners. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. They are still counting votes from the Democratic Republic of Congo's December 20th presidential and parliamentary elections. Incumbent Felix Tshisekedi, who is seeking re-election, is being challenged by about 24 other candidates. Wednesday's vote was marred by several alleged irregularities, prompting some opposition candidates to say that the results may not reflect the will of the people. Joining us from the DRC capital, Kinshasa, is Abdul Shakur Abu of VOA Swahili Service.
It's an interesting vote counting system here in a country which is as big as Europe. Some of the polling stations have finished counting their votes. Some are continuing. And those who just finished, they've started voting. So there's like three processes going on. Those who are finished, those who are continuing, and those who are going to start counting now. So that's how where we are right now. And it's going to be very difficult to know how it's going because vote counting is taking place at every polling station. And there are about 70,000 plus voting stations.
Any idea at all when they hope to finish the counting? As you said, again, thousands of polling stations.
Well, because half, I think, or a third, probably, we don't have the right count, have already counted and they've been transmitted electronically to CENI, the Electoral Commission. They have to tabulate them together, and they had promised they're going to start giving results of polling station and polling station from tomorrow. So from tomorrow, we will know exactly what's happening.
Already, the opposition is saying that the vote is not going to reflect the will of the people. What are you hearing where you are?
Yes, there are five presidential candidates led by Martin Fayulu, who was beaten by Tshisekedi in 2018, plus Dr. Mukwege, who had removed himself, but he's among the five, and Theodore Ngoy, with two other candidates who have come out with a statement yesterday evening saying that the elections were unfair. As you said, does not represent the will of the people because there are a lot of irregularities. Voting sessions were open late and discouraged a lot of people not to vote. They went home. A lot of machines had malfunctioning. The delay in opening some of the stations has made a number of people disenfranchised because a lot of them went back and some never came back, although the stations were open until late in the night. Some voting stations were opened until 1 in the morning. So there were voting going on, but they're saying that it's not fair. And another thing is that while new voting took place in areas where they did not even have the materials, the opposition is saying the CENI has no legal right to extend voting time. So it's unconstitutional according to them.
Shakur, thank you so much. A pleasure to speak with you.
Thank you very much.
That was Abdul Shakur Abu of VOA Swahili Service on assignment in the Democratic Republic of Congo's capital, Kinshasa. The United States on Thursday renewed a call for transparency in elections in the Democratic Republic of Congo after voting was extended to a second day following logistical problems. A State Department spokesperson said, "The United States reiterates our call for free and fair elections conducted with transparent and inclusive electoral processes." According to the French news agency, the AFP, the United States has previously called for transparency from the Election Commission to build confidence in the process. After the last presidential vote in December 2018, the Election Commission delayed the planned release of preliminary results and then declare Felix Tshisekedi to be the winner, leading runner-up Martin Fayulu to claim rigging. The United Nations Children's Fund, UNICEF, has issued a grave warning regarding the intensifying conflict in Sudan's Al Jazeera state, compelling over 150,000 children to flee within a week. The eight-month-long conflict between the Sudan Armed Forces, the SAF, and the paramilitary rapid support forces, the RSF, is engulfing more than half of Sudan's states. UNICEF representative in Sudan, Mandeep O'Brien, discussed the urgent risks confronting children and families in a conversation with VOA's Nabil Biagio from Port Sudan.
Since the war broke out from 15th of April, as you mentioned, more than half of the states in Sudan, that is 9 out of 18 states, have been experiencing active war. And since last Friday, the escalation of violence has started in Al Jazeera state, which now makes it more than half of the states in Sudan experiencing active conflict. It's been more than 8 months of brutal war in Sudan, which has been having a devastating impact on children. Sudan is a very young country. 50% are children. And the future of 24 million children in this country is at stake. As we speak, Sudan also records the world's largest child displacement crisis because more than 3 million children have been forced to flee their homes. It is within this wider context, secondly, we need to see what is happening in Al Jazeera state now. Jazeera state has a population of 6 million people, and half of them are children, that is 3 million children. And since the war broke out on 15th of April this year, Jazeera state, which is the breadbasket of Sudan, has been a safe haven for many displaced children and families. So it has been housing almost close to 500,000 displaced kids.
Madiba O'Brien is the UNICEF representative in Sudan. She spoke with viewers Nabil Biagio from Port Sudan. A jury in Liberia's capital, Monrovia, on Thursday found former Chief Justice Gloria Mususkat and three members of her family guilty of murder, criminal conspiracy, and raising a false alarm to police. Justice Scott and her co-defendant were indicted for their alleged role in the stabbing death of her foster daughter. Scott told VOA in March this year that she was concerned the police were trying to make her a scapegoat for a purported attack by armed men on her home and the killing of her foster daughter. She said the assault was an attempt to assassinate her. Counselor Augustine Faya is a member of Justice Scott's defense team. He tells me the team is disappointed by the verdict and is conferring about its next move.
We argue the case and the jurors did not favor us. We have only one person, a female, who was courageous enough and indicated that based on the evidence adduced by the defense and the prosecution, she did not see any reason why those defendants should be held liable. And so she was the only person. So the 11 against 1. So the defendants are held liable for murder.
So if there's 11 against 1, isn't that supposed to be what? A hung jury?
No. It is a guilty verdict. As in the case today, it is a guilty verdict because they have majority, jurors voting.
So, Counselor, do you plan to appeal the verdict?
Well, we are going to meet tomorrow and consider the better option, whether we are intending to request the judge to set the verdict aside because it does not support the evidence, or we intend to appeal. Whatever the better option will be, I'm not alone. We are a team working as lawyer, experienced lawyer and former associate justices and some former chief justices. So we are going to make sure we meet and decide a better option by tomorrow.
What's the mood of the former Chief Justice Mususkat? What is her mood?
Well, I tell you, Jimmy, the Chief Justice Scott is not a doer of this. She read a letter. She wanted a letter to be a very big person more than her. And so the only thing that she has been very terrible is that since that very deceased graduation, she was
dead when they were calling her during the graduation, saying that time she had been mooning for her. That is the only thing. But she knows she is not a doer. She came from a very different family. Her family had no stigma of killing anyone. They are very different family. Everybody in Maryland knows that. Everybody knows that. She is very, very, active, doing her normal business. She knows that God is in control. So she is very firm.
Counselor, thank you so much again. A pleasure to speak with you, and happy holidays to you.
Thank you, Jimmy.
Augustine Fayia is a member of former Liberia Chief Justice Gloria Muzuka's defense team. He was speaking with us from the capital of Monrovia. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, December 22nd. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And still to come on our program, Samson O'Malley Sports. The World Bank says remittances to low- and middle-income countries in 2023 might have reached an estimated $669 billion in its latest migration and development brief released this week. The bank says remittances to sub-Saharan Africa grew by a modest 1.9%. Egypt was the top recipient African country with $24 billion. However, the bank expresses concern that remittance costs remain high. Dilip Ratha is the World Bank lead economist and the author of the bank's latest migration and development brief. He tells me that in recent years, remittance flows to developing countries have surpassed the sum of foreign direct investment and official development assistance.
The total amount of remittances flowing to low- and middle-income countries in 2023 is expected to reach $669 billion, roughly $670 billion. And that, as you noted, is up by 3.8% compared to the year before. That is actually a bit of a moderation in growth rate compared to the previous 2 years, when remittances increased by 9% on average per year.
How much of this amount went to Africa? For example, which country or countries received the most remittances?
The amount of remittances to Africa was about $54 billion out of the $669 billion. And I want to first caveat that both these numbers are underestimates, because the true size of remittances, including flows that are not recorded, flows going through informal channels, is much larger.
Which country do you say is the main source? Where is all this money coming from? Is it from Europe, Canada, United States? Where?
But the interesting part about remittances to sub-Saharan Africa is that, contrary to our belief, a significant part of remittances actually comes from within Africa. That said, the largest source of remittances is still United States, and then Europe, and then I would say sub-Saharan African countries within the region, intra-regional flows, and finally the Gulf Cooperation countries.
So you say remittances cost remains persistently high. What exactly do you mean?
To send money from US to Africa or Europe to Africa, the average cost of sending remittances, about $200, is close to 8%. So you send $100 and the family would receive $92 equivalent, roughly. Within Africa, sending money from East Africa to West Africa or the other way could even cost more than 10%. And there is no good data on that, because the money transfer companies will tell us only how much they charge. But often the currency has to be converted twice, from a West African currency to perhaps euro, from euro to perhaps dollar, from dollar to an East African currency.
Dilip Ratha is the World Bank lead economist and the author of the World Bank's latest migration and development brief released this week. He was speaking with us from Washington, D.C. Malawi has banned the import of maize from Kenya to Tanzania over concerns that the spread of maize lethal necrosis disease could wipe out the staple food. More than 4 million people in the landlocked southeastern African country struggle with food shortages. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre, Malawi.
Kenya and Tanzania have long been primary sources of maize for Malawi during periods of food shortages. However, Malawi's Ministry of Agriculture announced a ban this week on imports in a statement that says the disease, maize lethal necrosis, has no treatment and can cause up to 100% yield loss. The statement says maize can only be imported once it is milled, either as a flour or grit. Henry Kankwamba is an agriculture expert with the International Food Policy Research Institute. He tells VOA that the ban would help Malawi prevent the disease.
As you are aware, some of the seed has already been destroyed due to the prolonged dry spell, and people are planting for the second time. Chances are, should we import some of this maize, some of that maize that's going to be imported might actually be used as seed, even though it's not recommended seed.
Kankwamba says once the disease is introduced into the country, it will be difficult to contain.
Think of how we lost almost all our bananas in the past. And now we are a net importer of bananas because for some reason, due to our lax policies in terms of imports, we ended up importing a banana bunchetop virus. And there are these similar concerns with maize.
Malawi is facing food shortages, largely because of the impact of Cyclone Freddy in March, which destroyed thousands of hectares of maize, the country's main food crop. The World Food Programme in Malawi and the Malawi Vulnerability Assessment Committee estimate that 4.4 million people, around a quarter of the population, would face food shortages until March of next year. Grace Mijiga Muhango is the president of the Grain Traders Association of Malawi. She says that while she understands the severity of the impact of the maize disease, banning imports at a time of need would likely result in price hikes.
If really we don't have enough food, then we are creating another unnecessary maize increase, because then the alternative for importation of maize has to be South Africa. And South Africa is quite a distance, and they don't have enough, meaning if we get a product from South Africa, it will be expensive.
Malawi's government says the ban will be temporary as it explores other preventive measures to combat the spread of the disease. Lamek Masina, VOA News, Blantyre, Malawi.
It is time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you too, James. Begin the sports with the latest FIFA football rankings. Morocco will go for next month's Africa Cup of Nations Cote d'Ivoire 2023 as the highest ranked side in the tournament following Thursday's release of the FIFA rankings. The Atlas Lions maintained their leadership position on the continent just 3 weeks before the tournament starts in Cote d'Ivoire. This means that Morocco will finish the year by maintaining their position as the leading African football nation, as there were minimal changes in the last FIFA rankings for the year, who are closely being followed by Senegal and Tunisia. In cricket news, Cricket South Africa on Thursday confirmed a 50-over tri series between South Africa under 19, Afghanistan under 19, and India under 19 later this month. The series will serve as the final preparations ahead of the ICC under 19 Men's Cricket World Cup 2024, consisting of 7 matches to be played at the Old Edwardians Cricket Club in Johannesburg from the 29th of December to the 10th of January. In neighboring Zimbabwe, 2 national players have been suspended for recreational drug use. Zimbabwe Cricket said the concerned players, Wesley Madhivere and Brandon Mavuta, both tested positive for a banned recreational drug in an out-of-competition case recorded during a recent in-house doping test. Madhivere and Mavuta have been suspended with immediate effect until a hearing is held on the breach of anti-doping rules.
Zimbabwe Cricket Board did not say what drug was involved, nor when they had failed the tests. In basketball news, Camerooner Joel Embiidy scored a season-high 51 points and 12 rebounds in the NBA as the Philadelphia 76ers beat the Minnesota Timberwolves 127-113. The 29-year-old is the first NBA player to score more than 30 points and 10 rebounds in 12 consecutive games since Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, 51 years ago.
Obviously, I'm using my handle a little more than I have in the past, and it's paying off. So, honestly, like I said, just taking whatever the defense is giving me. If they're going to cut me off, you know, I got that, you know, crossover step back and, you know, really just taking that, whatever they're giving me.
In athletics, Kenya double Olympic champion Eliud Kipchoge is set to take part in Tokyo Marathon in March. The 39-year-old, who set the course record of 2 hours, 2 minutes, 40 seconds in his only Tokyo appearance, said he has good memories of Japan having won his Olympic gold medal there and ran the course record in the Tokyo Marathon. Kipchoge described the Tokyo Marathon as the perfect preparation towards his aim of winning his third consecutive Olympic title next summer in Paris. And that's it for this Friday's edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a nice weekend. We bring you now holiday greetings from some of our listeners.
Hello, good afternoon, guys. I'm using this opportunity to wish my family of Mr. Friday Emeka Ebo of Enugu State, Nigeria, and the family of Ms. Peter Edan, Chief Peter Edan of Abia State, Nigeria. I wish you a Merry Christmas and Happy New Year. This opportunity to thank my family. Attend the session VOA, Voice of America. Continue with your good works. I wish you guys Merry Christmas and Happy New Year in advance. Thank you so much. May God bless you.
Hello. I'm called Biaranga Arthur from Chatoko Kunjiri, southwestern Uganda. I want to wish all the people who knows me, all my relatives, the friends, and everybody a very Merry Christmas and Happy New Year.
I want to wish you a Merry Christmas. I want to wish you a Merry Christmas. I want to wish you a Merry Christmas from the bottom of my heart. My name is Musa Ability from Monrovia, Liberia. Firstly, I want to extend my thanks and appreciation to the entire VOA team, including the VOA Africa team. I want to say I'm proud of you guys. I'm wishing you guys a Merry Christmas and a prosperous New Year. Lastly, all my family and friends, Merry Christmas and a happy New Year.
I am Chisembe Mwansa from Kawambwa, Zambia, Mopla Province. I first greet my children, my wife, and all those people that know me here in Kawambwa. I greet all the workers, all the people I work with at St. Mary's School for the Village Olympiad in Kawambwa. I greet all the parishioners at Kawambwa St. Mary's Catholic Church. And I greet my father, my brothers, my cousins there in Kitwe on the Copper Belt of Zambia. I also greet all the listeners to VOA, or Voice of America. Merry Christmas, a productive, fruitful, and prosperous 2024.
Hello, VOA News Daybreak Africa. I'm James Roy Majok from Unity State, Bentiu Town. I want to send my greeting to my mother, plus my friend who are listening on VOA News. A special greeting goes to Peter Goj Anyang Majungdul in Bor, Jacob Dior Macheng in Urol. Final greeting goes to two journalists of VOA News, Peter Kolote and James Bate. Guys, thanks for good services that you always delivered. Thanks. Happy Christmas. And Happy New Year.
Please send your Christmas and New Year messages to the following VOA WhatsApp number, 202-258-3076. Once again, 202-258-3076. And that's it for this Friday, December 22nd edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Botti, Washington, wishing you will have a great weekend.